I'd like to turn to the book of Haggai. It's between Zephaniah and Zechariah. That probably doesn't help you a whole lot. You go to Matthew and go back three books. You have Haggai. I'd like to read first 14 verses. In the second year of Darius, the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, This people say, The time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye that dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. You have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Go up to the mountain, and bring wood, and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord God had sent him, and the people did fear before the Lord. Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, and the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God. The book of Haggai, of course, is one of the 12 minor prophets of the Old Testament, so named not because of importance, though I believe that's what a lot of people think because they're books that are hardly ever read, but simply because they're shorter in length than the longer ones, such as Isaiah and Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel. All the Old Testament books of prophecy, major and minor, 17 in all, can be divided into three groups. You have pre-exilic, which of course means before Babylonian captivity. You could put in that group Obadiah, Joel, Jonah, Amos, Hosea, Isaiah, Micah, Nahum, Zephaniah, Habakkuk. Those are all pre-exilic, before Babylonian captivity. You have the exilic, prophets that were written during Babylonian captivity. Daniel and Ezekiel would fall into that category. And then you have post-exilic, after the Babylonian captivity. And in that group, you could place Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. That leaves Jeremiah and Lamentations, who were both pre-exilic and exilic. But these post-exilic prophets, which is Haggai, were the last men to speak before God spoke through his son. And Haggai is one of these post-exilic prophets. Now, the book of Haggai, there's only one book shorter, and that's Obadiah. But the book of Haggai consists of four precisely dated messages. What we've just read would be the first message. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 9 would be the second. Chapter 2, verses 10 through 19 would be the third. And chapter 2, verses 20 through 23 would be the third or fourth. Each message is introduced with the month and the day of the month that the message occurred, and then followed by, then came the word of the Lord. So you can, the book is very easily divided. Now, if you were to observe those months and days, you see that the messages were delivered over a 3.5 month period. So that gives us an idea of the time frame of the book of Haggai. Now, the messages, as you read them, were very plainly spoken. They're very direct. They are very vivid. They are amazingly relevant to our day. They're very clear. They're very easily understood. They're easy to apply if you want to. Our text is the first of the four messages delivered by Haggai. And in this message, Haggai draws a clear contrast between what the people were willing to do for themselves and what they were willing to do for the Lord. He draws a very clear contrast. He draws a very clear contrast to what lengths and expenses they were willing to go for themselves and what lengths and expenses they were willing to go for the Lord. The subject today is the work that occupies us. The work that occupies us. First of all, we need to give some background to our text leading up to that which took place leading up to our text. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, with his mighty armies, storms into Jerusalem, takes the most promising of the people, exile into Babylon. He also raided and ransacked the temple. And he took the vessels of the temple and he put them in the house of his own gods. And he destroyed the temple and he destroyed the city of Jerusalem. We read in 2 Chronicles 36 and 19, and they burnt the house of God. And they break down the wall of Jerusalem and burnt all the palaces thereof with fire and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. There was a remnant of people carried into captivity. The rest were left behind in Jerusalem. Both groups suffered greatly. They suffered differently, but they both suffered greatly. Those carried away into captivity would be there for 70 years. Those who were left in Jerusalem, again, they suffered greatly, though in a different way. They're forced to live in the midst of the ruins. It is important to recognize that this was not merely the result of the actions of Nebuchadnezzar. As we saw last week, the Lord had a hand in all of this. And it was due to the sin of the people who had been chosen to bear the name of the Lord. So you can, in our minds, observe the ruins of Jerusalem. To help you with that picture, you can read the book of Lamentations, chapter 1. And you see what was going on in Jerusalem amidst the ruins. And you observe the people that are taken captive. And observing these two things, you see the results of a people who took the messages of God for granted. You see the results of a people who would not hear the prophets of God, who would not take the word of God seriously, and who had disregarded the ways of God and instead chose the ways of man, moving further and further and further from God, dismissing Him more and more every day from their thoughts and their lives, putting other things in the place of God. As you observe those left behind, as you observe those who are taken captive, remember, this is the result of these things. Putting more and more esteem upon fleshly and worldly things than the things of God. So, due to sin, the people left in Jerusalem and those taken captive suffered greatly. Now, those who were captive in Babylon were there until God intervened. And after nearly 70 years, God would use the Persian Empire to break the power of the Babylonian Empire. And from Ezra chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, we see that God stirred the heart of Cyrus, who was the king of Persia, to give a written proclamation giving the Jewish captives permission to return to their homeland, to return to Jerusalem, so that they could rebuild the temple and so that they could rebuild the city. From Ezra chapter 2, verses 64 and 65, we learn that about 50,000 Jews returned back home. About 50,000 returned to Jerusalem. Cyrus would give them money and materials to rebuild. And God graciously watched over them and protected them as they made the journey some 800 miles from Babylon to Jerusalem. They eventually arrive in Jerusalem. Everything is different than what it once was. The countryside is in the hands of their enemies. The great and beautiful city of Jerusalem is no more. It lies in ruins. The walls of the city, the walls that were around the city, they've all been torn down. Worse than that, the beautiful and magnificent temple built by Solomon some 400 years before, it's gone. It's utterly destroyed. Again, the Babylonians had taken the gold and the silver and everything else of value. The Ark of the Covenant, gone. The temple with all its furnishings, gone. Everywhere you look is debris. Everywhere you look is broken stones. And the hard, dried chunks of mortar would be everywhere. Scattered and strewn about are broken rocks and splinters of charred wood. Absolute ruin. Absolute wreckage. Mere fragments of what was once very beautiful. An absolute mess. total disarray. In Ezra 3, verse 1, we see the people gathered themselves together as one man in Jerusalem. They had come back enthusiastic. And it says there in the book of Ezra that they rebuilt the altar of the sacrifice. And they reinstituted the priesthood. And they began to reconstruct the temple. This was their priority. We'll reconstruct the temple and then we'll get to the city. In Ezra 3 and verse 11 we read, "And they sang together by course and praising and giving thanks unto the Lord, because He is good, for His mercy endureth forever toward Israel. And all the people shouted with great shout when they praised the Lord, because of the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid." So they laid the foundation of the temple. And what a scene. They sing and they're praising God. But it didn't take long before their joy would be challenged by some opposition. In Ezra chapter 4, their neighbors came and offered to join in the work. But the Jews refused their offer. "You have nothing to do with our temple." Well, in turn, their neighbors began to threaten the workers. And they would send men to Persia to lobby against the Jews. So if you look at that, if you look at the book of Ezra, what you have is a coordinated and corrupt effort to bring in governmental regulations to inhibit the work. That's exactly what they did. We read in Ezra 4 and verse 4, "Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building." And we read in Ezra 4:24, "Then ceased the work of the house of the Lord." The building, the singing, the shouts of joy, the praising, the giving of thanks, all come to a halt. Everything is stopped. The pressure was very real. The impediments were very real. The discouragement was very real. The fear was very real. And these people who had been miraculously given the opportunity to return to their homeland, and God gave them traveling mercies for over 800 miles to return home. And they were very committed to rebuilding this temple to the glory of God. But they stopped. They stopped building. The rebuilding of God's house has ceased. And you read the book of Ezra, you follow it through, and you will see that approximately 16 years pass. No work is being done for approximately 16 years. And that's where Haggai comes in. So they've returned to the land. They laid the foundation enthusiastically. Opposition comes. Everything stops. And about 16 years have passed since these Jews returned to their homeland. And they, in that 16 years, they began to build their houses. And they became very comfortable in their lives. All you have in the temple is the foundation. I'm sure by that time weeds have overtaken that. Haggai, and then about 2 months later, Zechariah, come to these people and proclaim the message. And if you read the book of Ezra, you'll see that Haggai and Zechariah are both mentioned twice in the book. They preach their message challenging the people concerning their way of life during these 16 years. Here was a people who, in the rebuilding process, their priorities changed. Here is a people who had become numb and lethargic concerning the matters of God. Here is a people who had become discouraged and indifferent and very caught up in their own temporal concerns, in their own temporal gratification rather than the matters that would glorify God. Therefore, they were very quick to do their own things. They didn't do the things of God. So here were a people far more earnest in their own things than the cause of God. Here is a people who would probably give lip service to the fact that God must be first. But the truth is, they had drifted into a way of life where their intellectual belief in the preeminence of God was not reflected in the way that they were living. We said the book of Haggai is very, very relevant to our own day. Here is a people who had become so busy in their own things that they crowded out God. It was under these circumstances Haggai comes and preaches. And in this first message, which is our text, he challenges the people in their complacency. He challenges them concerning their misplaced priorities and their excuses for not rebuilding the temple. So let's look at the message of Haggai. It is from this first message that we learn and clearly see the activity and the mentality of God's people. In verse 2, God reveals to Haggai the condition of the people. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then in other words, they were procrastinating. They were always putting off the cause of God and the work of the Lord. In verse 3, the message of the Lord comes to Haggai. And in verse 4, the message begins. Is it time for you, O ye that dwell in your sealed houses, and this house, God's house, lie waste? Haggai begins by saying you can find time and convenience to build your own houses and to line them with boards and cedar. And you find time to indulge yourselves in luxury and ease, but you cannot find time for the Lord's work. That's the way he begins. Now that would turn off about 98% of people right away. But here's a people who had stopped rebuilding the house of God, and in the meantime, turn their attention to their own things. The truth is, every time they walk past that foundation of the temple, overgrown with weeds, it should have convicted their hearts. But it didn't, because they were too caught up in their own things. And they had actually convinced themselves, we don't have time for the things of God. The issue in verse 4 is not about having a nice house. That's not the issue. The issue in verse 4 is an issue of priority. The issue is not time. The issue is priority. You don't have a time problem. You have a priority problem. People say, oh, only if there were another 12 hours in the day, you'd misplace it. It's not a time problem. It's a priority problem. And that was the case here in the book of Haggai. So Haggai makes this statement, and then he says in verse 5, consider your ways. Give some serious thought to what you're doing. He is saying evaluate how that you have time for yourselves. Evaluate how you have time for yourselves and no time for the cause of God. Evaluate that. Verse 6, Haggai challenges them concerning their activity. It's not that they were lazy. In verse 6, he says, ye have sown much, but you bring in little. Ye eat, but you have not enough. Ye drink, but you're not filled with drink. Ye clothe, but there's none warm. Ye earn wages, but you put your wages in bags that have holes. Consider your ways. In verse 6, what he's saying is this. You have time to work in your fields. You have time to eat and to drink. You have time to attempt to clothe yourselves. And you have time to earn wages, and you try to save those wages. So this is a working class people out in the fields all day trying to make a living, but all their work is centered upon taking care of themselves. All of it. He's not condemning that they sowed in the fields. He's not condemning that they eat and they drank. He's not condemning that they clothed themselves. He's not condemning that they earned wages. That's not what he's condemning. But they didn't have any time for God. Again, it is a priority problem. They sowed, but they had little. They ate, but they never had enough. They drank, but never had their fill. They clothed themselves, but they were still cold. They earned wages, but they couldn't get ahead. The picture, again, is of people working really hard to take care of themselves for their own needs. A people endeavoring to get ahead. And it's all summed up in verse 9, where he says, ye looked for much. It says a lot about their attitude. And lo, it came to little. For 16 years, they chased the wrong things. For 16 years, they got nowhere. And you'll get nowhere chasing the wrong thing. From verse 9, we see that they had great expectations that ended in disappointment. And the reason is because the Lord blew upon it. Ye brought it home, and I did blow upon it. Why did I do that? Because mine own house, it's waste. It's a priority problem. So here's a people who walked over 800 miles for one reason, to rebuild. And to begin by rebuilding the house of the Lord. They returned to the land for that very purpose. But they stopped the rebuilding process. In the meantime, they turned their attention to themselves. They had convinced themselves, for whatever reason, now's not the time to rebuild the Lord's house. And God comes to these returnees and all their work and all their struggle and all their setbacks and all their disappointments. And He preaches to them through Haggai. He rebukes them for their mentality. He rebukes them for their activity. And His basic rebuke is this. You say that it's not time to build my house. You say that you do not have enough. You do not have what you need for the work of the Lord. But yet, in spite of all your hardships, in spite of all your lack, somehow you manage to build houses for yourself. And my house lies in ruins. He is saying to them, how is it that you do not have enough time, enough energy, enough resources to give to the work of the Lord, yet you have time, and you have energy, and you have resources to build your own houses? Here was a people who perhaps were thinking, just a little more. Just a little more, and it'll be time to rebuild the Lord's house. And how many of God's people fall into that trap? Just a little more, just a little more, just a little more, just a little more time, and pretty soon, time runs out. That's what's going to happen. Well, you don't understand. I got the grandkids. I got this. I got this. I got that. Oh, I understand. It's a matter of priority. This is a people who, when they first came home, had their priorities in order. It didn't take them long to lay that foundation. Clear the land, lay the foundation. Yet, through difficulties and opposition and various challenges, they slowly began to alter their priorities. And I believe that's how it happens. It doesn't just happen like that, slowly. Well, you know what? The sun's going down. I'm just going to work another hour in my house. Next day, same thing, just a little bit more time. And once I get this done, man, we'll go full force in the Lord's house. But the problem is, when you get that done, because it's a priority problem, something else comes in. Something else comes in. I've got crops to plant. I've planted my crops, now I've got a harvest to bring in. And I got my own house to build. It's not that they can't give their time and treasure to the work of the Lord. It's that they've given their time and treasure to something else. That's the problem. And every time we use those words, I don't have time to do such and such at the Lord's house, stop yourself right there and ask, why is that? Why is that? Just ask yourself. God, through Haggai, says to them, verse 9, mine house is waste, and then notice what it says, and ye run every man to his own house. What he's saying is, your house is more important to you than my house. You have an eagerness, that's what it means to run. You have an eagerness for your own livelihood, and yet that same eagerness is not to be found in when it comes to my work. They were fully engaged in their own pursuits, running harder and harder after their own stuff, and the matters of God. So So God is saying through Haggai, your own comfort and convenience has taken priority over my work. And you put forth more time and energy and resources for yourself than you do my work. My work has become secondary to your own work. And he says again, consider your ways. Now throughout the Old Testament, the history of Israel, God's chosen people, mirrors the spiritual history of God's people everywhere. In our text, the people whom God had set free from Babylonian captivity allowed them to go to their homeland to do what? To rebuild. They have forgotten their purpose. And that mirrors many, a child of God today. Here we are, we've been miraculously delivered from a life of estrangement from God. Delivered from a life of dominion under Satan. Delivered from the realm and the power of darkness. Delivered from being helplessly trapped under the weight of sin. Delivered from sinking deeper and deeper into the destruction and the loss and the misery of sin and death. Delivered from a life of wallowing in disgrace. Yet, they fail to recognize their main purpose, which is to serve the one who saved your soul. That is priority number one. I don't care if you're 25, I don't care if you're 85. That is priority number one. Serving the one who saved our soul. But in our text, we see a people so caught up in their own matters that they don't have time for the cause of God. You know, we don't have enough fellowships here, but I can't tell you how many times people say, Brother Dan, can we have a fellowship? We have one, and the very ones who ask to have it aren't here because they've got something else to do. It's happened every single time. Every single time. The thing is, it happens more and more each time. Well, you know, they'll make a list of 23 things that they've got to do that day. No time. No time for God. So caught up in their own matters. Many of God's people will say, well, if you have it a different day, I'd be there. No, you won't. Because by the time we put it off that long, you'll find something else to do. And here's why. It's a priority problem. Now, I realize things happen. That's not what I'm talking about. And this, people put their own houses ahead of God's house. It's disgusting. When the few people that clean the building, you get to certain sections and people say, well, you know where the kids are. That's true. But they shouldn't have left it that way. I don't believe that they let their kids eat at their own homes and just leave their food all over the floor. But for some reason they can do that in God's house. That's sin. That's a real problem. First of all, you shouldn't be allowing your kids to eat in church. But that's just my opinion, which I believe is correct. But if you do, at least have the decency to clean up the mess. It's God's house. Well, people will clean it. Why don't you clean it? It's your kids. I'm getting off track. Not really, though. Lord, I will, but not today. Tomorrow will come. Lord, I will, but not today. Next day will come. Lord, I will, but not today. This went on for 16 years. Lord, I promise you, I'll get to it as soon as I get this done. But the problem is, when you get this done, there's something over here that needs to be done. Because it's a priority problem. So, how many of God's people, just like in our text, it seems like it's always an inopportune time when it comes to the things of God. Now I realize I'm preaching mostly to the choir. But there are people who, I don't care when you ask them, they just don't have time. Isn't it funny? Everybody else got the same amount of time you do. That's one thing about time. We all have the same amount every single day. I believe it's the military that says, if you want something done, find the busiest person, give it to them to do. There's a lot of truth to that. Because it's a priority issue. It's a priority issue. Oh, how many of God's people today, when it comes to the things of the Lord, just don't have time. Yet, or I just can't make it today. Isn't that funny? You make it to everything else. Well, the roads are bad. Didn't keep you from going to the store. I remember very well, we were in Kentucky, threat of ice. I believe the ice did come. Zor Baptist Church was the only church in the county that had church. And I can remember that Monday seeing a church member, well, I won't say which church, and said, did you have church yesterday? And I said, yeah, we did. Oh, it's too bad. You could have met us down at Cracker Barrel on the Lord's Day. Couldn't make it to church because the roads are icy, but we'll all get together and go to Cracker Barrel. That's pitiful. If I did that, I'd certainly have enough sense to be too embarrassed to tell you about it. But the roads are too icy. And again, I understand. There are people who shouldn't be out on the roads when they're icy. I understand. That's not what I'm talking about. But you see what happens? The Lord does not have to slip far in priority. All he has to do is slip from number one to number two. That's all that has to happen. And pretty soon you don't have time. You don't have time. Everyone here, every one of us prioritizes God's work. We put it somewhere. Every person here, we put it somewhere. We need to examine our own hearts. Notice the solution that Haggai gave them, verse 8. He says, go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it. He says, get up to the mountain. Start cutting down the trees and build the house. And he says, and I will take pleasure in it. You know what that means? That means God says, I like that. Boy, what a joy. When God looks down on you and I and says, I like that. That's what it means when God takes pleasure in something. And how sad when God looks down and says, I don't like that. What he's saying here in verse 8 is change your pursuit. Instead of pursuing your own house, pursue my house. He's saying adjust your priorities. And then he has the promise, I'll take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. So everything that Haggai says in this message is spoken in light of the fact that God delivered them from Babylon. Haggai is saying, God did not raise up Cyrus to set you free from Babylon and allow you to come back home to be self-serving. That's not why God raised up Cyrus, but for you to be busy in the work of the Lord. God did not save our soul so that we could spend the remainder of our days in self-service, but to serve the one who saved our soul. Haggai is calling upon the people to remember their priority, their primary purpose in life. And our primary purpose in life is to be to serve God. That is to be number one. Number one. Serve the Lord. Serve the Lord. Let us not fall into that trap. And it seems like there are an awful lot of people in it. I've known people in it for 40 years. They're still in the same trap. They're still saying the same thing. I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. Yet they got time to make their doctor's appointment. They got time for everything under the sun. Too sick to come to work on Sunday, but they're just as sick Monday and they go to work. They go to work. Oh, we could go on and on. God help us to have time for the Lord. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.